This business of the inner team of workers, all actually operating within the law. There was once in a while some aberration, but we usually found it and brought it to Mr. Dulles' attention. But generally working within the law could get rather phenomenal things done. For example, one day I got a call from the agency. They had heard of the capability of a new aircraft that had been designed at MIT, and they wanted to know if the Air Force had an interest in it. Well, the Air Force hardly knew about it. I had seen a picture of it in the newspaper. And I said, well, let me find out what we can do about that. I called the company, a small company, but it had very preeminent people, Dr. Coppin from MIT and Dr. Bollinger from Harvard Business School, and a lot of very good aircraft designers and builders in the company. So the company was solidly on the ground, but it was a very small company. And I told the man that I was talking to that I was from the Air Force, I was colonel in the Air Force, and that we had an interest in this small plane for certain special activities, and that I would send a representative of my office up there to talk with them. Well, I called in a CIA man, the same man that had called me, and I said, look, you're from my office. Here's some credentials. You go up there, you see this company, you know what you want. And I didn't know whether they'd really want the plane or not. But they decided they did. In fact, they wanted hundreds of them, something that company had never heard of before, orders in that number. And sure enough, we bought hundreds of those airplanes for the CIA, technically for the Air Force. The Air Force had no concern with this because the CIA money paid for it, didn't cost us anything. But we didn't go through the Air Force procurement procedures at all. We just completely went just like a civilian buying airplanes. And the CIA was delighted with the plane. They used them. They used so many of them in Southeast Asia that there was a flyer's handbook with what were called heliostrips. In other words, air landing grounds that only the helio airplane could land on, because it could land a very short, and it was under control right down to the ground. So these little runways were hardly suitable for helicopters, and this little helio plane was operating regularly. And, well, millions and millions of dollars were poured into that exercise. A lot of people were involved in it, and it never went through any Air Force procurement. Now, the cleared individual, the man and the team, in the procurement offices made papers that covered up this gap. There were papers in the files, but they had never been worked on. They were simply dummy papers in the files. And we could do things like that with no trouble at all. The U-2 was started like that. That's how the U-2 got off the ground. Ostensibly purchased by the Air Force, but not paid for by the Air Force, and so on. So when I say that this team was quite effective, it was very effective, very strong, handled a lot of money, worked all over the world, thousands of people were involved, and I know one time when I was speaking to the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, at that time General Lemnitzer, he said, you know, I've known of two or three units in the Army that were supporting CIA. He said, but you're talking about quite a few. He said, how many were there? Well, at that time, there were 608. Well, General Lemnitzer had no idea. And it's amazing. Here's the top man in the military, and he had no idea that we were supporting that many CIA units. Not military units. They were phony military units. They were operating with military people, but they were controlled entirely. They were financed by the CIA. 608 of them. And I'm sure that from my day it increased. I know it didn't decrease. So people don't understand the size and the nature of this clandestine activity that is designed for clandestine operations all over the world. And it goes back again to things we've spoken of earlier, that activity must be under somebody's control. There is no law for the control of covert operations other than at the National Security Council level. And if the National Security Council does not sign the directives, issue the directives for covert operations, then nobody does. And that's when it becomes a shambles, as we saw in the Contra affair and in other things. But the National Security Council steps in and directs it and holds that control, then things are run properly. And we've seen that during the last decade, there's been quite a few aberrations, whether we're talking about Iran or Latin America or even a part of the Vietnam War itself. In fact, it was in the Vietnam War where the thing really began to come apart. It just outgrew itself and the leadership role disintegrated. And we see the worst of it in the Iran-Contra affair.